All right, we're here. I'm Dan Fernandez. You are?
Blaise Aguirre-Arcas.
And Blaise, what team do you work on, and what are we talking about today?
Well, I've been the architect of incubations at Live Labs, and in particular, Sea Dragon and Photosynth. That's where I've been putting most of my effort in the past year.
So, Photosynth, it started out as a PhD student's project. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right.
And so this is one of the challenges a lot of times in whether it's students or even MSR, taking a concept and bringing it into an actual production consumer application. There's a lot of challenges between I can get it to work on 100 machines and I can get it to work on any laptop and any device. So, talk through some of the things that you did to take the application, how it's architected, so they're going to run on anyone's laptop.
Sure. Well, and the challenges in this case have been a lot greater than just getting it to run on more machines. In fact, part of the challenge is getting it to run on less machines. I mean, the dirty little secret of Noah's beautiful demo of Notre Dame reconstructed from a few hundred Flickr photos is that took weeks to reconstruct on a cluster of machines, of fancy machines.
Wow. So you're talking about a lot of CPU power.
Yeah, we're talking about taking something like that and shrinking it down until the same thing works on a laptop in an airport in the same amount of time that it takes to upload the pictures.
Okay.
So it was a very, very impressive engineering feat. When I say engineering, I really mean both scientific computing and research and engineering. And a lot of that was the work of Drew Steedley and David Nister. And they have a couple of other guys that they've worked with to integrate and test and so on.
Yeah, so at a high level, why don't we go through sort of, you mentioned the team, and you're a small team.
Yeah,
so,
we're only about 15. Right.
Yeah, so what's the makeup? Is it developers? Is it scientists? How many people are on the back end? How many people are on the front end? You mentioned some of the things around.
That's right. So, I mean, with so few people, you know, we wear a lot of hats. Everybody wears a lot of hats.
Right.
We have only one person who actually calls himself Test, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That means that he both has a lot on his plate, and also a lot of the rest of us have to do a lot of testing as we go, and have to be thinking about building test platforms in parallel with the algorithms and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Algorithms are tough. You know, that's the logic is extremely complex. The algorithms are very complex. The testing has to be built up in parallel with that. David Nister, who wrote a bunch of the core stuff for the computer vision part, wrote some very complicated test harnesses for getting all of his stuff not only very, very robust, but also extremely optimized and be able to measure all those things in real time. So
let's walk through what actually happens. I have a set of pictures. Let's just go through the 100 Flickr example of 100 Flickr pictures. What actually happens? I upload the pictures, and then at what point, what are the things that you guys are doing on the back end? Is it deconstructing the images and sort of walk through the process?
Well, one of the most interesting things here is actually that happens on the front end, not on the back end.
So
we've taken a kind of bizarre choice for a Web 2.0 style release in having a download that's connected with this thing. And we're betting that what we're doing is unique and special enough that people will actually download that plugin.
Right.
But one of the reasons that we're doing it is because the actual computer vision, those hard algorithms, are in that binary.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the same time as those photos are being uploaded, and that takes a few minutes to an hour or 2 hours, I suppose, if it's really a slow connection or a lot of pictures or very high resolution.
Mm-hmm.
While that's happening in parallel, your computer is busy doing all of that number crunching. And then,
and then
by the end, it sends up, you know, not only you have the images uploaded, but you also have sent up the information that relates all those images to each other. So to be specific, what is that calculation? What is it actually doing?
Right.
What it's doing is it's first analyzing all of those images for features. And what a feature is some particular patch of pixels on one image that's distinctive, that has a little corner or a blob of some kind on it that the algorithm hypothesizes will look quite similar in another photo of that same spot in the world, taken from a slightly different point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know, in other words, my nose or one of those letters or the end of that E or something, those are features that from another camera's point of view will still be recognizable. Mm-hmm. Maybe at a different scale. Maybe one was a close-up. Maybe one was from farther away. Maybe we changed the perspective a bit. So the idea is that you find all of those features, and then you do a matching process. The matching process is, I believe this feature in this image corresponds to that feature in that image. So two XY positions mm-hmm. are really the same thing in XYZ in 3D space.
Okay? Yeah, so I mean, some of the challenges here are you're talking about pictures. Some might be during the day. Some might be during the night.
That's right.
Different types of cameras.
Exactly. And you're getting now at the hard part of how to extract features. Those features have to be simultaneously invariant with
right.
respect to things like the type of camera and the time of day and the lighting and the point of view to some extent, and yet have to be very informative about what that actually was. I mean, if all features look the same, then mm-hmm. you have no way to match them. So it's hard to optimize both of those simultaneously.
Yeah, and how many unique features are you going to extract from photos? Like, what's in a normal photo
right.
where you're taking, are you talking about tens, are you talking hundreds, thousands, millions of unique?
Right.
I guess it's almost per pixel or
well,
how big are these features?
Sure. I mean, it very much depends on the type of image.
Right.
So, for example, if it's a featureless white hallway, then there are not going to be very many feature points there at all. It might only be in the tens.
Okay.
Or even in the ones.
Wow.
Whereas,
okay.
whereas if you take a picture of beach sand or of rocks, that's full. That's loaded with features. And at that point, you might be looking at 10,000 features in an image. Especially if it's a high resolution,
right.
digital SLR type photo. You know, the number of features generally goes up like the number of pixels.
Okay. We've gone through
right.
all of these photos, and I guess in memory we have some sort of, I guess, in-memory object that has a list of features per photo. Now,
right.
where is it at that same time looking for those same features across them, or how does the stitching part actually work at
right,
that point?
Right, right. So it's not stitching, and this is actually a pretty important distinction to draw. I mean, usually one thinks about, and in fact, for panorama stitching applications, sometimes that first step looks quite similar. You're looking for features in common,
mm-hmm.
but then the next step, the stitching part. Involves making a new image out of those original images and blending at the seams and doing a bit of distortion to get things flattened out and so
mm-hmm.
on. And this is actually quite different. But yeah, that's right. So after identifying the features, you do the matching.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you've done the matching, after you've found all those correspondences between features in one image and another image, then you do the 3D reconstruction. And what the 3D reconstruction is all about is solving for XYZ of all of those features, as well as solving for the positions and orientations and focal lengths of all of the cameras, consistent with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a lot of people in the machine learning community or in computer science in general are familiar with what's called an optimization problem,
mm-hmm.
meaning you have some energy function, and you want to minimize it, and you have a bunch of free parameters, and you're trying to move those free parameters until that number shrinks to the smallest value.
Sure.
Okay, so in this case, what that energy function looks like is, suppose that you hypothesize particular positions for the cameras and particular positions in 3D space for all the features.
Sure.
All right, if you do that, then you can project that 3D feature down to the imaging plane for each camera and say, where would it end up on the imaging plane for each photo? Okay. So there's a place where it would end up, given all of those, and there's a place where you actually see it. Right? And you want those to all coincide. You want the lengths of those lines on the photos to all drop to zero.
So you don't have distortion, I'm assuming, like when things
right.
may be either larger or smaller, depending on distance,
navigate. What I mean is every 3D point in space
uh-huh.
should end up actually at the spot where the feature for it was detected
on
each image, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Right, if I hypothesize this point is over here, and that means that it ends up here on the image, but I actually saw it over here, that's bad. So you want to shrink them. You want to shrink those distances. And in the process of optimizing that energy by moving around the cameras and moving the 3D points, the end result of that is the cameras in the right spots and the 3D points in the right spots. Okay, so it's a big, hairy, very nonlinear optimization problem. But the end result is the point cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that 3D point cloud is just features that matched across two or more photos, or usually three or more photos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as well as all of the positions of the cameras.
Now, you talked about some of the processing challenges when mm-hmm. it was sort of server-based, or I should say, you had a bunch of machines crunching on these photos.
Right, or no, we never actually did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it CPU-intensive? Is it
extremely
hard drive-intensive? And what are the things that you've done to sort of optimize
sure.
it so that anybody can run it on your machine?
All of the above. It's very processing intensive.
Okay.
And the amounts of data are also quite large. So a lot of the work that Drew and David have done has involved things like sparsifying the data cleverly so that you're only working on subsets of it at a time, throwing out hypotheses early when it's clear that those hypotheses are wrong, it's starting again.
It's looking for those things and then taking sort of the parts that win and then moving on with the picture?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And growing solutions, adding more cameras in to grow solutions and so on. Yeah.
Fascinating.
So it's a very, you know, very multidimensional sort of problem, and they've just, you know, been hammering at this thing for more than a year now, getting it really optimized.
So how's it written? How many lines of code are we talking? What's sort of the person hours that have been put into
that? I haven't the slightest idea. I mean, all of us have basically been working on this thing like gangbusters for, you know, as long as we've been working on the project. For those of us who've been working on it the longest, that's almost 2 years.
Okay.
No, that is 2 years, in fact, or more. And for the most recent additions to the team, that's just a couple of months.
And in terms of dev, is that 5, 10 devs, or what's the?
I'd have to count. Let's see.
Okay.
The other thing is,
I'm gonna put you on the spot.
I know, but it's also actually quite hard because we have a very small number of people who really are full time Photosynth team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a slightly larger number of people who have been recruited from various other parts of Live Labs to help us with ops and with web development and with deployment and so on.
Right.
So you know that extended family, is probably in the dozens.
Right.
But the real core team that's, you know, for whom this is a full time job, is probably less than 15. So I'm guessing of order. Oh, but also when you ask devs, you know, I mean, who's a dev? You know, it's like for some of us, for example, are researchers. And those researchers, unlike traditional researchers, are writing production quality code, exceptional code, in fact. The main dev for the viewer, which isn't even that 3D reconstruction stuff, but it still involves a lot of computer vision and a lot of interesting problems, that main guy has, Joshua Podolak, just finished his PhD.
Mm-hmm.
As a researcher, and actually has never written production code before,
so, you know, so it's a very supposed to do production code.
No, that's right.
Somebody else to productize.
That's right. And on the other hand, the devs who are working on this thing also, you know, have really had to dive in,
right,
to a lot of technical depth and do things that, you know, it's not like, you know, fancy .NET coding or whatever. I mean technical depth of the scientific kind.
Yeah. So this is C++ coding.
Yes.
I'm assuming now, what things are, I guess. Are you writing everything in-house, or were there other algorithms that you could take from the community, and are you all sharing them out in terms of outside of research, where in terms of just image processing or 3D processing?
No, so everything was written by us. And,
okay.
That's something, when Noah did his phototourism project, he took a very rapid development kind of approach, and of course when it's research, you can pull code from wherever you want. You know,
right.
So he pulled a lot of off-the-shelf components together,
mm-hmm,
and made something really, you know, pretty compelling. But for this project, we really have started from first principles because, I mean, it's not just a question of IP encumbrances and other sorts of things. It really is about the quality and the performance. I mean, I think what these guys have done with those algorithms is pretty much unparalleled. I don't think it's been done equally well anywhere else.
Wow. And so some of the things, just thinking about processing, are you all doing multi-core, multi-machine processing? So if I have a four-core laptop,
we are. A lot of those steps are very parallelizable, and we are making use of that.
So did you all have to re-architect the application for that, or?
It was built from the ground up to make that work.
Okay, so you all were specifically targeting parallelism in your architecture.
When you're extracting features, when you're matching features, when you're solving little local systems of a few cameras, those are all things that can be broken up, that are amenable to a kind of divide and conquer approach.
Interesting. So what there's certainly going to be a release of Photosynth by the time this video airs. But what do you see as sort of the future of Photosynth? So we're seeing the machines certainly bulk up, but where do you see, in terms of either algorithms, do you see this technology being used in other areas or potentially even in say, embedded devices, or where do you see the interesting parts, interesting challenges? Because it certainly seems like you all are taking on the big challenges, visual processing, 3D processing.
Yeah.
Where are you all going?
Everywhere. this is a whole new universe. I mean, there's so much. So much green pasture here.
Yeah.
And that ranges from other kinds of devices, moving certain sorts of computing up into the cloud when it involves, for example, mobile devices doing synthing.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to look at not just having individual synths, but connecting synths together and connecting those geospatially.
When are you going to get the world where I can then, you know, mash up two synths and then people start literally putting the world together piece by piece?
It's coming.
Okay, and what about video? Are you all looking at
also, any? Yes,
okay,
of course.
Interesting.
Of course, our wish list is really long and our team is very small, although it's growing now. We're finally going to get to really grow it. We made a lot of brutal cuts throughout this whole process. The fact that everything was so resource constrained really meant that we had to think very hard about where our which kind of value proposition we were going to go for early, and what's the real heart of this thing. And we've cut it very close to the bone for this first release because we really didn't want to keep on delaying. We wanted to get it out there and get users working with it and playing with it, and start a community to building up organically, and a lot of those questions about where we go next will be very strongly informed by the community. We're exploring all sorts of ways of doing things. We may even put the list of ideas out there and let them be voted on, and so on. And we're looking at options as open as that.
Yeah, certainly that's worked in other groups where they put mm-hmm. in, and then people can vote on ideas or feature requests.
Mm-hmm.
So in thinking about developers, are you all looking to have a developer API or ways mm-hmm. for other people to use either this stuff or, I can just imagine a world where either I want to use those libraries or I want to interact with the synth programmatically.
Sure.
Right, where I can actually do, GPS or, for my cool application lets me know. So talk about some of that stuff. Are you all looking for APIs?
Well, so as far as the core components of the synther go, they've been built in such a way that it can be broken apart and it's modular and so on. I don't know yet what our plans are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to how or whether we open those up. Certainly there are all kinds of applications for some of those core algorithms.
Right.
But what I have been very careful to do is to keep the API of the entire experience of the viewer and of the experience open, and that means that it's going to be possible to do all sorts of very interesting mashups. Using the viewer, and so things that applications that make use of other services of GPS and geolocation services or other things
mm-hmm.
Are going to be possible. It's going to be possible to embed this in any place, and communicate back and forth with the viewer in all sorts of interesting ways. And that's something that we plan to extend in the future.
Wow, interesting. So it sounds like a lot of great stuff coming down the pipeline, and I want to see that feature list of videos you have. So, ladies, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.